This is 9/11 Freefall.
Gentlemen, welcome to another episode of 9/11 Freefall. My name is Andy Steele, and I am the host. Tonight, we'll be talking about the latest news and developments related to 9/11 activism with Craig McKee. The interview is coming your way right now.
The views expressed on this show by guests and the host on issues outside of the 9/11 controlled demolition evidence are the opinions of those individuals alone and do not necessarily reflect those of architects and engineers for 9/11 Truth.
Craig McKee has been a journalist in Montreal for more than 30 years, covering news and entertainment. He's won 8 provincial and national weekly newspaper awards, and he is the writer at the blog Truth and Shadows. He's also a writer for AE911 Truth. He's been on the show many times. I like having him on, and whenever we're discussing issues that are pertinent to the 9/11 Truth movement, I enjoy talking to Craig about it. I know the audience likes listening to you as well, Craig. So welcome back to 9/11 Freefall.
Thank you, Andy. Thanks for having me back. Appreciate it.
So we're going to cover a number of things here, and one of the issues we're going to really cover next week when we have a very special guest coming on, and I'm not going to announce it now. I'll let it be sort of a surprise to the audience. I know they're going to be excited. We're going to touch upon it today. But before we get into the stuff I had planned that we're going to talk about, I was at your blog today, Craig, getting your bio off of there to introduce you, and I had forgotten and was reminded when I looked at your blog that you just had an experience with a well-known celebrity-type person named Dennis Leary, and you wrote an article about it. So why don't we begin by having you share with our audience that experience?
Yeah, I wrote about it. I mean, it was originally, a friend of mine, a very good friend named Fred Serra, who I've worked with in different sort of arenas for about 30 years now. We used to be news reporters together at a paper in the West Island of Montreal. And now I write for a magazine that he edits. So we've been working together on and off for a long time. But he told me, he called me up one day and he said, "You'll never guess who's coming to our ball hockey game on Saturday." And I said, you know, I mean, nothing would surprise me because, you know, Fred's involved with he helps out with the Just for Laughs festival every year, the comedy festival. So, you know, it could be anybody when he says something like that. But anyway, it turned out, he said, Dennis Leary is going to play hockey with us for the next few weeks. He is in town, was in town, I guess he's gone now, but he was in town shooting a movie for Fox, a Christmas movie for Fox, and with Jay Baruchel, and he really likes to play hockey, and he doesn't, when he's on the road, he likes to try to find a way to keep doing that. Apparently, he can't play on the ice for insurance reasons, so he plays ball hockey instead. So they set this up where he was going to come to this game, and I immediately, the wheels started turning in my head, and I thought, well, Dennis Leary, well, he had the show Rescue Me, which had that scene in it with Daniel Sunjata, who is a well-known, fairly well-known actor, who also happens to be on the 9/11 consensus panel and is a vocal 9/11 truther. And there's kind of a famous scene in, I think it's the 5th season of Rescue Me, where he basically makes a speech to another character about his belief that 9/11 was an inside job. And it's kind of noteworthy because you just don't see that in regular television or regular movies, somebody saying those things. So I immediately thought, geez, wouldn't it be great? And I know that Leary is very big on supporting firefighters. He's been involved. He's got a foundation where he, you know, helps out firefighters. He's very sort of vocal about the problems that firefighters who were at Ground Zero have had with their health, and the fact that the government has not been very forthcoming with, you know, with funds in the past to help with their the health care of the first responders. So I thought to myself, I wonder what the chances are, because my friend was saying that there's a good chance that Leary would stay after the game and maybe have a couple of beers with the guys. So I thought, you know, if I kind of went along and hung out with them, I could sort of get on a, you know, a more sort of informal basis with him, and then slip this into the conversation and see if maybe he would either do an interview or maybe even go so far as to make a statement of support for the firefighters in Franklin Square and Munson, near Queens, New York, who have passed a resolution calling for a new investigation of 9/11. And since Leary is so supportive of firefighters, I just immediately thought, well, there's an opportunity to support firefighters. And since his show kind of went where most shows would not go, you know, maybe he'd be open to that. So I went to one of the games, but unfortunately, I watched the last part of the game, and then as soon as it was over, he was right out the door and into his car. So my hopes that we would kind of hang around and get chatting kind of didn't work out. And then three or four weeks later, I got the word that he might be coming for his last game on that Saturday. And so I thought, okay, I better give this one more shot. So I went down again. And after the game, again, he wasn't going to stay, but he was sort of in the hallway, and my friend was trying to sort of get him to introduce me, but then he turned around and left and was out the door. So my only shot was to kind of follow him outside. And I knew this was not the way I wanted this to go, because, you know, instead of being just somebody who was introduced by a friend and was chatting with him, I was going to be the guy sort of running after him saying, you know, excuse me, sir, you know. So when I did follow him out, I asked him about the possibility of doing an interview about, you know, what these firefighters in Long Island are doing, calling for a 9/11 investigation. And the answer I got back was just one sentence. He just said, you know, nah, I'm not getting involved in that. 9/11 conspiracy theories. Nah. So that was it. And I didn't really have any good comebacks to that, especially since it was clear that he was going to be in his car in about 4 seconds. So I just kind of said, well, okay, and off he went. But then I thought, given his history, and given his history with firefighters and what he did tackle in his show, I thought there was a worthwhile article to be had from the whole experience. And what struck me the most was that he, you know, he's such a supporter of firefighters, but it seemed like when it came to firefighters that maybe weren't on board with the official story of 9/11, well, then his support was not, you know, was not really there. And what I didn't get a chance to say to him, and I kind of regret, I mean, I regret that I didn't really get the chance, was that some of the people in the Franklin Square and Munson district have become ill from exposure to Ground Zero. Two of the commissioners are actually ill, and they had people who were part of their fire department who were killed on 9/11. So I didn't really get a chance to say that, and I'm not sure it would have made any difference if I had. So I kind of decided I would write this article about it, and kind of, you know, in a not a very complimentary article, I guess, about him. Anyway, I think it was worthwhile, I guess. And I also, the other thing I was going to mention is that he he actually was in the movie Wag the Dog, which I thought was another interesting thing. Here's a guy who's acting in a movie that is really all about a massive government deception, you know, and propaganda and satirizing a completely fake war, staged war. And yet when it comes to 9/11, his idea is, you know, math, conspiracy theories. So I was disappointed a little bit. But I guess I knew that it was probably a long shot that he was going to do something supportive, you know, because he's a popular actor now. He's on the show Animal Kingdom, which I've kind of been watching over the years. You know, so he's got a career, and I guess he doesn't really have any interest in jeopardizing his career. So that's pretty much how that went.
Well, a lot of actors find the way to increase their fame is get behind certain causes, but they got to be safe causes. I think that the issue of the first responders on 9/11 at a certain point became a safe cause. It's just common sense. Why wouldn't you take care of these people? But, you know, something like this is just a step too far for many of them. They probably have agents that are talking in their ear saying, don't touch that, and just have the regular cognitive dissonance. But it's great to make that effort, and I encourage everybody out there who's listening to the show, talk to celebrities if you can, bring it up. If you're a firefighter, especially if you were there on the scene and you have questions about 9/11, I would, you know, let them know that you exist out there. Let them know this is a real issue. And you never know how this stuff is going to manifest. It doesn't have to just be the person on the screen. I mean, a lot of the power is held by the people producing the movies or the people writing them. I mean, if you find out someone is a script writer or a writer for a TV show, you start talking to them about these concepts. Now, maybe you'll convince them and maybe you won't, but just putting it in their mind might get their imaginations going, and then maybe this gets manifested into a TV show later on, which is still helpful because then it makes it more acceptable to the general public. I mean, a lot of the general public is just peer pressure focused. Anyway, it's just how it is, right? So when you make something more acceptable on TV and you portray it as a common part of real life, people start incorporating it into their own lives. It's like they've been given some validation, or the issue's been given some validation, and they have permission now to be a certain way or think a certain way. And I just encourage everybody to keep on talking about it and have these conversations. And even if they're not on-screen actors, if they're involved in Hollywood or TV producing in any way, let them know that this is out there and that it's not just fringe crazy people. And if they take that angle, I think they'll get more viewers too, if they actually take the angle of not demonizing people like us who talk about this. So good effort there, Craig. And we'll see. Maybe Dennis Leary will jump on board when this becomes more popular someday.
One would hope. I was going to add, too, that, you know, there are people who are willing to go much more out on a limb than he was willing to go. And I'm thinking about Daniel Sunjata. And I kind of wonder, what effect has this had on his career? I mean, he still works. He was in one of the Batman movies. I can't remember which one, but I think it was the one that had Joseph Gordon-Levitt in it. You know, so there's a case where, you know, he had been a vocal supporter of 9/11 Truth for a few years, and, you know, he still got that part. I mean, mind you, it's not a starring role, and I don't know if, you know, it's just kind of a thing. I guess we'll never really know how something like this does affect someone's career. You know, I mean, Ed Asner is, you know, continuing to work, and he's, you know, he's very vocal about 9/11, but I don't know. He's reached a certain part, a stage in his career where I guess he's not really worried about it. You know, so I just wonder what the real penalties are that some actors would pay if they did speak up.
I think psychologically, that's the reward when you reach a certain age. You just don't care anymore. And I'm starting to get the level 1 experience of that myself at 40. I'll probably be at level 10 by the time I'm 70. That'd be wonderful. And Ed Asner has spoken out. And you know, it's funny how they treat these popular celebrity people that speak out about this. A couple of years ago, we were talking about Ed Asner on the show, and I had seen an article where they took his statements about 9/11 and they just sort of treated it like it was like he was, you know, the zany grandfather or something. Like, oh, that wacky Ed Asner just talking about science and common sense, you know? And actually, I mean, it's better than them demonizing him for it, but they still try to manage the public perception of what these people are saying. I think a lot of celebrities have leeway, though. I mean, if you're like a rock star or movie actor, it's not the same as being a politician because, you know, you have the public eye and people see you and they recognize you. A lot of times they recognize you as the characters you play. Like everybody immediately thought when there was allegations against Bill Cosby that it was just out of bounds because they think he's actually Heathcliff Huxtable. I mean, not consciously, but subconsciously they think that he's like that nice guy delivering babies and giving lessons to kids, life lessons and stuff, and they just, you know, but you don't actually know who these people are behind the scenes. I mean, they could be the biggest monster on the planet, but, you know, but these celebrities have a platform, but they don't have official power to do anything about it. So I think they get more of a pass than a politician would because, okay, if like a senator comes out and says, I think there's some serious questions about 9/11, well, then the natural response to that would be, then you're in the position to do something about it.
You know, people love to hate celebrities who get involved in politics, but it seems like they'll love the celebrity if they're on their side of the political spectrum. You know, they'll cheer for them, but if they're on the opposite side, well, then it's like, well, you know, why is someone from Hollywood weighing in on this? What do we care what they think? You know, they're just rich celebrities. So a little bit of a double standard there.
I remember in Michael Moore's movie, Fahrenheit 9/11, which was like the prequel to my own truther story. Like, it didn't wake me up to 9/11. He didn't talk about the towers were brought down and controlled demolitions or anything like that, but it did wake me up to the reality of the Iraq war. And I remember there's a scene in it where Britney Spears is being questioned by some interviewer, and it's trying to make Britney Spears look bad. You know, she's kind of sitting there and her posture is very kind of bimbo-ish. Now, I don't believe that she is in real life. I don't judge people on this stuff. She's there to plug whatever the heck she's doing. Was she a singer? And the guy's asking her, do you support the Iraq war or something to that effect? And she's like, yeah, I think it's good. And they're trying to portray her like she's like this ditz celebrity, but why are they asking her? Like, if she wanted to be president or politician, she'd be pursuing that. But she's there to push a song or whatever she's doing, and they're asking her this question that has absolutely nothing to do with what her career is. And what's she going to say? So I thought that's kind of unfair to judge this person based on that. And she's young, too. You know, a lot of us supported this war when we were young because we weren't exposed to the information that we have. But celebrities are people just like everyone else.
Yeah, and some celebrities make a choice to get involved in the political arena. You know, Susan Sarandon or Matt Damon or, you know, any number of others. So you can kind of be a little more tough on them because they're speaking out politically. They're you know, stepping into the arena. But yeah, somebody that's just a young celebrity that really is not even attempting to be political, it's kind of unfair.
Yeah, they did the same thing to the guy that plays Iron Man. I can't think of his name now. Oh, Robert Downey Jr. He was there to promote a new Avengers movie, and the guy started asking him about politics because he made some statement about, you know, being more libertarian, like, many years before. And the guy started to confront him about it, and Robert Downey Jr., I mean, handled it totally alpha. It was really cool the way he handled this guy. He ended up walking out of the interview because he's just there to plug a movie and not get into all this stuff. And I appreciate when they do that. The media is trying to steer the narrative and control public perception, and they're just desperate now to maintain that power that they're just inserting this stuff into every aspect of human life. That's one consequence of the post 9/11 world. And, you know, you could say some of it's not related to 9/11. It's just, I noticed that it became more apparent and it became stronger after 9/11 because some crazy stuff went down and America was watching. And you started having the post 9/11 agenda inserted into TV shows, 24, Justifying Torture. And then it kind of morphed into other issues, whereas now you just can't escape politics, no matter where you go. You can be watching a show you like, and there'd be some comment about the president. I'm not taking a stance on either side here on this show. I'm just saying there's times when you just want to watch a a superhero movie and not have somebody preaching at you about what their politics is, and you just can't get away from it anymore. And I would like to see that end, maybe possibly through 9/11 Truth. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, if anybody's gonna, if you're gonna see any 9/11 Truth in a film, it's gonna be somehow disguised. So you're gonna have to kind of read between the lines. You know, I mean, there are examples of shows that kind of hint around the whole false flag idea, but there's got to be something indirect about it. Otherwise, the film will be attacked, I imagine.
It's so funny you mentioned Wag the Dog. I remember seeing that. I was 18 or something, and we just decided to go see it because we were bored, me and my friend. And I came out of that thinking that is so far-fetched and ridiculous. And now I saw it again a couple of years ago, and I'm like, yeah, that doesn't go far enough. So it shows how someone's thoughts change over the years. All right, let's get to The Purge here. And I'm not talking about the movie. I'm talking about this development that I only found out about because of a comment during the webinar last week. Apparently, YouTube is planning to get rid of content beginning December 10th that they don't feel is profitable to them. Now, us here in the Truth Movement, we hear this and we know that they never come out and directly say we're going to start censoring videos because we just want to turn YouTube into a glorified cable box and get rid of anything that has any real information. They don't say that outright, but they use these other excuses. Well, we're just going to focus on things that we think are profitable. You know, some teenager reacting to a TV show or something. I hate reaction videos, by the way. I think we talked about this offline at one point. Talk about trying to be a celebrity with zero talent. You just set up a camera and then you watch something and you just react to it in a very dramatic way. There's no talent involved there. But anyway, that's a side issue. But YouTube is going to be purging this kind of stuff maybe even shows like this. You know, that's the concern that we're seeing here, and this creeping censorship is going on. So, Craig, I want to get your overall thoughts on that.
Well, I mean, the profitable thing, I mean, I heard this very recently, too, and I have to say I'm not entirely sure. When they say profitable, I mean, do they mean literally profitable, that they make, it has to be something that they make money off of? I mean, surely there are many, I mean, there are millions of YouTube videos that are not monetized. So I'm not really sure how they make that distinction. But I mean, it seems like, I mean, they're purging political content anyway. They've been doing that for a while now. So, you know, I don't know if this is just another excuse, another way to get rid of another whole swath of kind of alternative and dissenting points of view. Because I don't really understand how their profit model works, in a way that would explain why deleting videos would, you know, help their bottom line. I don't know if you know about any more about that aspect of it than I do, but that's a bit confusing to me.
Well, that's a good point. How does deleting videos and alienating your people that make your business possible going to be profitable? I mean, I don't understand how YouTube... I mean, I understand a little bit. Let me rephrase that. If you make a video and you're a popular vlogger, you can monetize your videos, and I think they can put advertisements on it. They get money for advertisements. You get a small piece of that, and you get to make money off of doing what you like doing. So I don't know if they're planning to take down anything that isn't monetized, but then you're really going to just chop off a big part of YouTube. I mean, yeah, I got under a private video, some family party from 1990 or something that a relative sent, and I put it up on YouTube, a private link just for my brothers to be able to watch. I mean, are they going to pull that down? That's not profitable. It's probably got 3 views, like me and my 2 brothers, you know? under that blanket excuse, that video should come down, but I don't think it's going to come down because nobody cares about it. AE911 Truth, our videos aren't monetized, right? And this sounds almost like a damned if you do and damned if you don't situation, because if we monetized it, then the bad guys would be coming out and saying, oh, they just care about money and they're only producing these movies to make these videos to make money. But now if YouTube's going to say, well, we're not making any money off of this, then they're going to justify taking it down. So you just can't win. And I don't think that's the point. You can't win because you're not supposed to. They're trying to clear this all from the internet. And it's not happening in one fell swoop. It's happening in increments. I really think they thought that people would just accept things like 9/11. 9/11 was kind of the beginning issue for a lot of people. I know there's veterans who were talking about JFK and these things back in the day when the only time you could get any kind of real coverage of this other than the Oliver Stone movie was on shortwave radio and those sources. But for a lot of people in the modern day, 9/11 was the first issue. And I really don't think they counted on people caring enough to use social media, MySpace, and all that to spread this information. And it got out of control for them. They have to now clamp down on it.
Yeah, and they got to keep coming up with disguise the real reason why they're doing it. I'm actually just looking at a quote from the change that YouTube's making to its terms of service as of December the 10th. The quote here, it says, YouTube may terminate your access or your Google account's access to all or part of the service if YouTube believes in its sole discretion that provision of the service to you is no longer commercially viable. No longer commercially. It doesn't explicitly say, you know, that they won't make money, but what is commercially viable? What else could that mean?
Well, that's the thing. It's supposed to be YouTube, and it's supposed to be people uploading funny videos of themselves, funny things that happen, and a lot of people don't want to be professional video bloggers. They just upload it because, hey, I want to share it with, like, some friends, so where are they going to fit in? Because then it's not really YouTube, it's UsTube. We're just worried about making money off of other people's hard work. And that seems like a trap, too, because you have talented people out there making actually good video blogs, no matter what the subject of it is, even if it's something completely useless to our cause. If somebody's talented, it's almost like they're basically just signing up with another producing company. They're not out there controlling their own career, putting out their own stuff, appealing to their own kind of audience. They're basically now going to be selling out to the big production companies, in a sense, with YouTube, because that's what it's going to turn into, and having to compromise it. I mean, I always like the aspect about the internet is that somebody might make a zombie movie, very low budget, put it on YouTube, or advertise it on YouTube, and get enough audience to have a following, but it's not going to appeal to everyone, and that's fine. It's just very democratic, or at least it was. Now it's like you're going to have to take into account, like, oh, this particular thing is going to offend this group of people, so you can't have it in there. It's going to be TV. It's going to be TV in the 80s all over again, and that is going to really stink, and especially for our cause, 9/11 Truth.
Well, yeah, TV was, nobody ever really thought TV was democratic or that it was open to everybody, so you know, we didn't really think we were losing anything. We were missing anything back then. But, you know, the social media, it's not supposed to be like TV in the 80s. It's supposed to be more democratic, supposedly, and more available. And you know, you don't need to have hundreds of thousands of dollars behind you to make a film. You can make a film on your phone and put it on YouTube, and it doesn't cost you any money at all. That's kind of what the ideal of it was. But, you know, that's fast disappearing, as you said. And, you know, this new measure just seems like a kind of a carte blanche. It's like saying, okay, if we're the only ones that define it, and if we define that something's not commercially viable, you know, we'll just decide that we don't want it up there anymore. And who's going to challenge that? Who's going to question something that gets deleted because it's not viable? Who's going to know whether that was even the reason? You know, it might be something, it might have nothing to do with it being commercially viable or not. It might have everything to do with it, with the political content. But you know, who's going to be able to, there's not going to be any appeal mechanism. I mean, I found that out when I had my own blog deleted by WordPress. You know, they claim, yeah, they pay lip service to there being an appeal process, but there isn't, you know. And actually, one thing I was just reading the other day that I didn't know is that if Google decides that you have in some way violated their terms of service, they can kick you off Google and YouTube, even if you haven't violated YouTube's terms of service.
Yes, yeah, they own it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you could be indirectly booted off of YouTube.
Well, you know what I think it is now? This blanket justification is not commercially viable, is that they couldn't get away with saying that it's hurtful or bullying content or offensive content, because that's subjective. For instance, 9/11 truth movies, the majority of them just present facts, talk about 9/11, talk about thermite, free fall acceleration, all of that. And some people might find that offensive if they want to get behind the official story and don't like to have this thing questioned, right? I'm obviously not offended by it. Craig McKee is obviously not offended by it. But they'll go after those kinds of videos. But at the same time, there'll be videos where some random goofball is pulling pranks on strangers out in a park, humiliating them. And I don't see that touched. I see it almost promoted. I mean, they got hundreds of thousands of views. You know, some person loses their pants on an amusement park ride, and that video is spread far and wide. I mean, I'm sure this person doesn't want that video out there. There's nothing they can do about it because some jerk filmed it, you know, from standing on the periphery of the scene. And not only do they spread it far and wide, it gets reported in the news as if this is some major historical event that took place. And, I mean, I don't see those videos being pulled. Now, that would be considered somewhat bullying and whatnot. So it's totally hypocritical, and they can't use that standard anymore, that it's offensive or hurtful to somebody or whatever the term they use. They don't have it at the tip of my tongue at the moment. They can't do that, so now they just have to come up with this vague, commercially viable excuse in order to complete the purge here. And again, it's not going to happen overnight. You can probably still find 9/11 truth videos if you look hard, but it's harder to find them now. Have you found that it's harder to find them now?
Oh yeah, absolutely. Before, you could put in a general search term, and this same thing goes for Google, and you would get a selection of things. Now, if you don't know, you know, the name of the video that you're looking for specifically, you may not find it at all. And even if you know the exact name, you may not find it pops up right at the top. You still have to go hunting a bit. And it's not just 9/11, but it's anything that kind of, you know, challenges the, you know, official narratives on a host of subjects. But 9/11, of course, is the big one. I mean, they use the term, and I really think you're right when you say that sort of the commercially viable thing is kind of catching whatever they couldn't catch before. That's the way I look at it. You know, they've approached this, they've gone after, they deleted something like 17,000 YouTube channels on the basis that they were hate speech. And that was a couple of years ago, I think, or a year ago, I'm not sure. Now, who knows how much of that could actually, you know, be defined in any reasonable way as hate speech. You know, we don't really know without going through them. But, you know, they get rid of those, and then they start to talk about harmful content. And then they defend harmful content as including conspiracy theory videos. You know, people that think 9/11 was an inside job, or people that think that, you know, some event was a false flag, some violent event. I think Sandy Hook was even specifically mentioned as an example of one of the things that they would boot you off for. So, you know, that's why that term, I mean, I think that's probably the most successful piece of propaganda that the CIA ever came out with, which that memo that it put out to its media assets back in 1967, giving them ways to argue against the Warren Commission report. You know, that whole use of the term conspiracy theory as a way of kind of demonizing any kind of dissent has been wildly successful for them. And now the term conspiracy theory, you know, simply is just, you don't even have to go beyond, just give the term, and you've already ridiculed, you know, your target without even having to give any details.
Well, you know, to illustrate the hypocrisy even further, I point out the hypocrisy of them claiming hate or hurtful material, supposed conspiracy theories, but they'll leave up videos where people are being humiliated just randomly for someone else's amusement, or bad scenes that people don't want to have out on the internet. That'll spread far and wide, and YouTube does nothing about it. But you also have the promotion of absolute nonsense, as long as the person appears zany and goofy and you're not taking them seriously. Like, what I will find is a lot of videos out there, and they'll always have the same MO. There will be a thumbnail picture in the video where whoever is going to be speaking in the video has a goofy look on their face, and then they'll do top 10 lists, like the top 10 conspiracy theories that have some truth to them, or something to that effect. And first of all, if somebody's a real person in the movement, they're not going to refer to their issue as a conspiracy theory. So that's a good sniff test indicator right there. But then they'll go on and talk about the absolute wackiest stuff, or stuff that's safe, ghosts, because that'll never be proven one way or another. History Channel, I love to bring up this point. Years ago, they did this, I think it was 2-hour hit piece against the 9/11 truth movement. You had Lester Holt standing there all authoritatively. And, I don't know anything about Lester Holt other than he was on the Today Show, I think, and he dresses well. So, he's got to know what he's talking about, right? You don't have to actually go to college and graduate school and get a master's or a PhD. All you got to do is go to JCPenney and spend $1,000 on a suit. But anyway, so Lester Holt for 2 hours, demonizing 9/11 activists, bringing on Popular Mechanics, making History Channel the authoritative voice on what is true, what isn't, what is scientific, what isn't. But then they show 10 hours of Ancient Aliens, and I've had people try to make me watch this, and these shows will put forth the most fantastic nonsense that I have ever seen. They'll be seriously talking and giving credence to the idea that there's lasers underground that shoot out asteroids, and they were put there by some alien civilization years ago, and that's why we haven't been hit by an asteroid in so many years. Rather than getting into some scientific explanation or talking about odds and probability, they'll just jump to some science fiction explanation that has no merit, no credibility to it, or they'll do 8 hours of Nostradamus. Nostradamus, those predictions, it's like firing an arrow and then painting a bullseye around it. You read the stuff, it's so vague that people try to just twist it around and make it into a prediction, and it's just utter nonsense. And they will jump to just all these hoops in order to promote it, because people get excited about this stuff. So they got the bottom line in mind, but don't be acting like you're the authoritative voice on what's true and what's scientific and what's responsible information to put out to the public when you're putting out this other nonsense stuff that's provably false. I just love that. I love that contrast there.
I don't know if I'd ever really thought about it quite that way specifically, but I guess it's true. And a lot of those shows, I tend to think that there are, grains of truth in there, kind of along with a lot of the show business part of it. And those shows have tons of speculation in them, that they'll usually say, could it be that such and such, ancient alien theorists think it's true or something. So they phrase it as a question. Could it be? And then, so you can't really go too far wrong with a question, because you're not making a statement. But it's kind of a cartoonish way to look at ancient archaeology, which I think is a worthwhile subject, but
Everything is interesting, but what they do is they just jump to these wild conclusions. And as long as they say some people believe, then they're covered. Because if you can get one guy to believe it, or one guy to say it at least, then they can just make a whole show out of it for an hour. Look, I don't think it's bad. I don't think it's hurting America that they put this stuff out there. But it does hurt America when you are trying to get everybody chasing phantoms and boogeymen and lights in the sky, instead of actually looking at what's here on Earth and physics and common sense and a real serious issue where a lot of people died and we're still feeling the ramifications of it. They give more credence to just absolute fantasy and speculation and nonsense than they do to people who actually know what they're talking about. And I think that's very telling. So I just ask the listeners, even if you don't like what I'm saying about all of this stuff, I mean, just, you know, think maybe they want you chasing boogeymen instead of actually looking at the stuff that's real. Maybe that's the purpose of all of that. All right, I want to make sure we cover this today. Tulsi Gabbard, I never covered it here on the show. We had an article put out by AE about Tulsi, and she's been speaking out a little bit about 9/11. You want to give our audience the background on that, Craig?
Well, yeah, she's been, for the last couple of months, she's been talking about the fact that she wants to stand with the 9/11 victims' families and the first responders, who are particularly the ones that are suing Saudi Arabia, you know, with the claim that Saudi Arabia was involved in 9/11. So, you know, and of course there are various opinions about that inside the movement, the 9/11 Truth Movement, but it just shows how somebody in her position, she's the only candidate, I think, who's taking this stance. And on the, you know, on the plus side, she's asking questions about 9/11 and suggesting that there are things in the story we've been told that are not true. So you could look at, you could take a glass half full approach to that and say, well, who knows what'll be lodged loose, you know, when this kind of discussion is going on, or, you know, she's pursuing the release of different documents, you know, related to 9/11. But of course, you know, she's also going for a safe kind of challenge to, you know, to 9/11. She's not challenging the U.S. government's, you know, behavior or the evidence that, you know, calls into question whether the U.S. government was involved, or, you know, I mean, it's just focusing on this one foreign government. And she has also, on the negative side, she's really, in bringing this up, she's really reinforced her belief, you know, that Al-Qaeda was definitely behind this. They attacked our country, and, you know, the planes hit the towers, and that was what made the towers come down. And so you kind of get this is where the double-edged sword comes in. On one hand, she's asking questions and asking for documents to be released. On the other hand, she's kind of reinforcing the official story, the official Al-Qaeda terrorists story. So, yeah, that's. I don't know if I covered every aspect of what you were thinking of with respect to this, Andy, but that's my summary of it, I guess.
Yeah, my take on it is that it's always good when somebody's requesting more information and casting some doubt over the official story. I mean, I live in the real world, and I know the situation that this country is in, especially in politics, and I know that a candidate that comes out and openly says, I think that the buildings in New York were brought down in controlled demolitions, and we need an immediate investigation of that, the media won't cover them. I've seen candidates who won't touch this, but who talked about other issues that were controversial, or who just the media did not want to become president, completely ignored. I mean, you can look into what they did to Ron Paul during the 2008 and 2012 elections, where they tried to pretend he didn't even exist, and then they would kind of go after him. Just totally sandbagged the whole thing. I know there's been other victims of that as well. So, I mean, they have that kind of power, and a candidate's not going to come right out and say that they question it. Now, I have no idea what is going on in Tulsi's mind. I'm not even going to speculate on what she really thinks, or if this is just a cover and she's really going to do something. I don't even know, you know, if she gets into power and finds that it's too difficult to pursue this. I mean, that can happen. People come in with high expectations of what they're going to do, and then there's a control system that kind of keeps them in a box and unable to do something about it. But it's good that they're speaking out. It's good any time that we make progress, and we have to keep up our efforts in reaching out to these people and letting them know it's a mainstream issue, and maybe educating them more. And you have no idea how that might influence their decisions moving forward, knowing this information. Maybe there'll be some other thing that comes up, or maybe CIA will be giving them intelligence in the future, saying that we need to get the military involved in a certain situation, and they'll question that intelligence. They'll not trust their own CIA or their own agencies, or what I should say, rather, is that some of the people that are in them, because it's not always all the people in the agencies that are doing the bad stuff. You know, they'll think for themselves more, not just rely on aides to tell them what to think. So I think that's why this outreach is very important. And then who knows what happens when they become president. I mean, miracles do happen in the world sometimes. And maybe overnight they'll come out and say something. Now, I'm not sure if she's going to win or if she's going to be the candidate here. We can always keep an eye on it and see what happens. But I don't know. What do you think of her prospects?
Well, I don't think they're great or even probably good. I don't really support any of them because I think they're all kind of propping up the status quo. But if you put a gun to my head and said you must support one person for president, I'm Canadian, so I don't even have a vote. But she would certainly be it because she's the only candidate that's prepared to speak out against wars. I think in that sense, I'm kind of intrigued to see her taking the stance she's taking, because she's not, it's not just about the 9/11 stuff, but she's really the only person, as I said, who's prepared to go into some of these debates and talk about, well, she talks about regime change wars. I think it should just be wars in general, because the first Gulf War was not a regime change war, but it was still it still led to a lot of death and destruction. But Tulsi is one of these people. She's kind of getting the Ron Paul treatment this time around. And Bernie Sanders, of course, has had it a lot, but she's the one that's getting kind of smeared in the mainstream media. I mean, I saw an article in the Huffington Post that referred to her darkly paranoid ideas. In this case, she was talking about 9/11, or they were talking about 9/11. So they, and they referred to this as her conspiracy theory about 9/11. So even something that doesn't really challenge the heart of the story is enough to get her attacked. Jimmy Dore, for those who watch Jimmy Dore, I've kind of become a fan of his, even though he won't touch 9/11. But I kind of wonder if he's maybe he's got some ideas that he's not saying about it. But he showed in one of his videos, he showed Tulsi Gabbard going on The View. And just the treatment that she got, all she was doing was talking about how, wars are bad, regime change wars are bad, what the Americans are doing in Syria is wrong. And you would think she had just endorsed the Ku Klux Klan or something on national television. I mean, they were all very hostile towards her. So you can't even question what is really an American government-initiated war in Syria. You can't even say that. You're going to get smeared and you're going to get marginalized. So I think she's probably not going to win, but to me, there's such a bad crop of candidates that, they should probably consider her, but I don't think they will.
Well, the stereotype I grew up with was people on the left were anti-war. Most of them and a lot of these people in Hollywood are on the left, and it just, if they're going after her for that, the majority left people on that show, it makes me wonder what the mainstream left even stands for anymore. I guess banning straws is a more critical issue than what killed 3,000 people.
I don't recognize, though. I mean, I consider myself to be on the left side of the spectrum, and I don't recognize what passes for the left today. The fact that, especially in the United States, I mean, the fact that the Democratic Party seems to be the warmongering party now. That's a complete flip from, what used to be the case. Really, when you come down to it, you've got two parties that are basically pro-corporation parties. So you really don't have two radically different parties. But, it's definitely, to watch passes for the liberal media and the Democratic Party talking about war now, you just wonder, what the heck is going on? because it's just, it's like the worst days of red baiting, you know, the McCarthy period. I mean, they're actually talking. I mean, not only does Hillary Clinton call Tulsi Gabbard a Russian asset, but even on The View, when she makes some comment about an anti-war comment, and Joy Behar says, oh, well, that's the kind of thing Putin would say. I mean,
suddenly Russia's the bad guy.
It's a moronic level.
Yeah, and this all relates to 9/11 because these are the obstacles that we face. And yeah, I forgot that Hillary Clinton called Tulsi a Russian agent. Anybody that is now discussing things that go against the status quo, that go against what the officials want the public to believe. Now, I guess instead of being a possible terrorist, we switched into being a Russian agent.
They got to freshen up the threats. They can't just stick with the same one for decades. They got to keep bringing in new threats. You know, it used to be the Soviet Union, then it was Islamic extremism, and now it's like, well, we're back to the Russians again.
Yeah, what happens after the Russians? What is it going to be? Is it going to be the Chinese? Is it going to be the Peruvians? They'll just randomly pick a nationality. But I don't want it to seem hopeless, because the fact that they are getting so ridiculous and people are seeing that and so turned off by it is a positive thing. I think the chaos is good, because out of the chaos, people are just going to get tired of it and have it out. And we need to have it out in this country. And 9/11 needs to be prominent at the forefront of it. And we just had somewhat of a success happen. AE 9/11 Truth put out a bulletin encouraging supporters to write to NIST and ask them to release their input data, especially now since the World Trade Center 7 study is out. And this actually forced NIST not to release the input data from their World Trade Center 7 study, but to write a new FAQ. So they're aware that the people are aware, and they're having to do something. Anytime you can make them do something is always a step in the right direction. What are your comments on that, Craig?
Yeah, no, I agree. I mean, just the fact that they did that, it showed that they were getting enough questions and enough pressure, which is entirely AE 9/11 Truth's initiative, and you know, they made it happen. And so, absolutely. I mean, if they didn't feel the need to respond, then they wouldn't respond. But their FAQ, I don't have it in front of me, but it's pretty lame. You know, they just kind of reiterated what they've been saying all along, that you know, there's all these details in the information that could make it possible for somebody to bring a building down. But I mean, they don't really demonstrate that any better in the FAQ than they have, you know, all these years. They're just trying to get that answer out there in the hope that, I guess, people won't, you know, feel the need to ask the question in the future. But I agree with you. Yeah, whenever you can get them to do something, it means that you've had some kind of effect, because they would much prefer to ignore you.
Yeah, they're afraid of some building coming down and a guy being on the news saying, I did this because of NIST. And, of course, it's absolutely ridiculous because the building doesn't even exist anymore. And if their explanation really is that fire brought it down, and if that is actually possible in NIST world, then you don't really need a lot of data to figure that out. You just start a fire and run. So it's just a cover, and they don't want to release the input data because we're going to see what exactly they did wrong, or more correctly, what they purposely did wrong in order to get to the results that they wanted. And we can't let the input data get into Russian hands either.
Right, because the Russians then will be bringing down all of our buildings, which they would be doing right now if they only had that information. That's the only thing they're missing.
I mean, their whole world is so ridiculous that all you can do is make fun of it now at this point. And, you know, I feel like we're in the final rounds of a Rocky fight where the I don't want to say villain, but the adversary is getting tired and beginning to wear down. That's what it is. Now, look, yeah, that doesn't mean tomorrow we're going to have a new investigation, because when I say the rounds of a Rocky fight, I mean, we're talking spans of years here. But it's starting to get tired. The people are starting to see through it. And even if it's not on this issue, like 9/11, we're still planting these seeds. And so at some point when people are sick of this and something manifests, some kind of change manifests, will already have this implanted in people's minds that this issue hasn't been settled, and be able to come back to it and have some final justice in the end. So that's what we got to do. And you get people to that point by talking about this, and talking about it intelligently, not ranting about every theory that goes into your head, but just laying out the evidence, showing that this is justified, this is rational, that this has been well-researched, and that this need for a new investigation is a real thing. And we are at the end of the hour here, Craig. So do you have any final thoughts to leave this audience with?
That's the toughest question of the whole hour, actually. I guess only that we, as you kind of are suggesting, that we have to keep being, you know, positive about these things and keep trying kind of everything we can think of. You know, some people will say, oh, what are you bothering with NIST for? You know, I mean, you know, we already know what the evidence is. But, you know, those people are maybe missing the point that, you know, it's not about convincing 9/11 truthers of what the evidence is. It's about, you know, breaking through outside of our community. So whether it's writing to Tulsi Gabbard to push her to look at 9/11, or writing to NIST, or making the film that AE's making about Building 7, you know, whatever it is, we've got to kind of try to do everything possible, and not just sort of think, well, we're going to do one thing at a time, and that's going to be good enough. You know, we've just got to keep trying everything.
Exactly. It's like you're learning to play harmonica. It's not like you have to sit down for 3 hours and practice. You can just pull it out at any moment you have free and jam out a little bit and then put it away. That's what you can do with this. I mean, anytime you can maybe leave some literature somewhere in the course of your day, it's always helpful. So that's how you have to look at it. It's a long fight and an enjoyable one, because the other side is destroying themselves slowly but surely. All right, Craig, thank you so much for coming on 9/11 Freefall today.
My pleasure. Thanks for having me, Andy.
This program is on every Thursday night on No Lies Radio, and every other Thursday night on BBS Radio at 10 o'clock Eastern, 7 o'clock Pacific. You can also keep track of the archives by going to 911freefall.com. This is Andy Steele, saying have a great week, and good luck.